Selection Sunday is behind us, which means it is time to fill out your March Madness brackets. I'm Connor Allen, hosting a special episode of Move the Line. Joining me today is Jason Lisk from our friends over at Team Rankings and Pool Genius. Jason, how did the conference tournaments treat you and Selection Sunday?
Conference tournaments were wild. It's been a long weekend because, man, those things went off the rails sometime on Friday and didn't really ever get back on. So many crazy things. How many top seeds lost? Teams making runs to championships to completely altering the field. We thought it would look a certain way, and the seed lines look completely different than they looked a week ago.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts. I think one of the biggest surprises to me was maybe NC State winning the tournament there. Were they double-digit, I think, underdogs to Duke in the first round? Was that sound about right?
Absolutely. And then, I mean, still against North Carolina, had to beat them in the final, even after they pulled the you know, what happened against, you know, Virginia. So, craziness.
Yeah, absolute madness. But before we hop into today's show, we're going to break down a couple teams were higher than consensus on, a couple teams were lower than consensus on, maybe some Cinderella teams. I want to let you all know today's show is sponsored by Team Rankings. Their tools and analysis will help you dominate your March Madness pools. They allow you to plug in your own custom settings for whatever pools you have, for how big of a tournament pool, if it's 10 people, 20 people, 100 people, that changes your strategy dramatically. And they help take care of that all for you. Their brackets win over 200% more than expected since 2017. So find the link in the show notes, get up to 55% off of their incredible tools and picks and so much more. So I want to start off here, basic bracket strategy. You know, we're talking to people who are trying to win their bracket pool, but maybe not, you know, haven't done that well in the last couple of years. So any thoughts here, just off the top, like your favorite basic tips for filling out a bracket?
Yeah, for you, this year, just know how many people you got to beat and like what you need to do to get the money and use that as a guide on how risky. Think of it this way. If I'm, let's say there's 30 people and three spots pay out. So my chances are 10% going in. Do I really want to get that much riskier with like how much where my champ pick is or where a team to the final game is? If I don't think they have at least a 10% chance of getting there, am I giving up edge by just picking them? So don't get too crazy if you're in a pool where your chances of hitting a payout are low or, you know, higher. Relatively, because there's not that many people or the payout spots are more flat. Obviously, you get into bigger pools, you got to think more like, where am I finding the value that nobody else is picking?
Yeah, no, that's a great point there. Yeah, it's something that I can't stress enough, because if you're in your pool with just 10 people or your family, friends and family, you don't really have to be all that creative. Like, you can just pick a lot of the standard teams, because not everyone knows who the standard teams are, especially like everyone just sees the 1 seed, 2 seed, 3 seed, 4 seed. I mean, Auburn is a 4 seed this year. And like UConn last year, like they were number 5 or I think 4 in KenPom's overall metrics and like a lot of other advanced statistics. And they're a 4 seed like in the total thing. So again, like just understanding and using tools and metrics to help you understand that better, I think is really important. So I like that strategy a lot. One of my basic ones, I am going to always pick the 1 seeds over the 16 seeds. I know that Purdue just lost last year. I know that Virginia just lost a couple of years prior. I'm not willing to say that that's a trend. I think those were kind of just rare circumstances, especially this year. I like a lot of the 1 seeds early on. So I'm going to keep picking them. I mean, we're looking at now, I believe, 150-2 overall 1 seeds are versus 16 seeds. So I'm going to stick to the math on that one and pick the 1 seeds. I have a feeling people are going to probably pick a couple of 1 seeds to lose, yeah. Maybe at a higher rate this year. Have you noticed that on your end?
Well, you know what? It is crazy, because like if we were in like an NFL pool, you would have like a team that was like, let's say a double digit favorite that had like 85-90%. They'd be like 98% picked. That's about the pick rate we're seeing on the 1 seeds, which is crazy because their odds are like at least that. So you're not giving up that much value by actually picking 1 seeds right out of the bat, because I think it's like ingrained in people's minds to pick more upsets in March Madness. And so they're willing to do things like take a 2% shot when they don't in other contests. It is kind of crazy. Like, I don't think you need to get that crazy.
Yeah. And one of my favorite ways to pick, you know, quote unquote upsets is by looking at betting spreads to make picks to choose upsets, because you'll have every year there'll be a 5-12 matchup or, you know, something like that. Or 11-6 specifically, where the 11 seed is actually favored in the betting markets over one of the lower seeds. And so people you're playing with brackets with don't always know that. And so they may miss that, but where in reality, like those teams win at a pretty high rate, like outright. And so I personally would go with a team like that. And that's, I think there are one or two examples this year even where there's, you know, some of the lower seeds are favored. Any thoughts on that strategy?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, so New Mexico's favored over Clemson right now. New Mexico, yep, coming off of winning the Mountain West tournament, was already like fairly highly rated in a lot of the advanced metrics, went up even more inside, I think, the top 25 in a lot. And Clemson kind of had a bad performance in the ACC. So they're favored. We haven't had many of these cases of outright favorites. We've had plenty of like close to pick'ems, teams that are 1 point dogs. There's been, I think, 11 cases since 2011 where a team was favored who was like an 11 seed or worse right out of the gate. They're 10-1. Now, does that mean it's going to happen this time? No, but I think what you get, Connor, in these cases is you get some public resistance to making an 11 seed the favorite. And so if they're made the favorite, there's usually a really good reason why. And there's people pulling that number to where it is. And we've seen that with Gonzaga. The last one we saw was Michigan 2 years ago against Colorado State in the first round. And Michigan not only won that game, but went to the Sweet 16, if you recall, as an 11 seed. And so, I think New Mexico has that potential. I mean, they're a top 30 type team who, for some reason, got seeded as an 11.
Yeah, way underseeded there. We're looking at them as like a 1.5 to 2 point favorite, depending on the book. I think that's a great shout out there specifically. Any other points of strategy you want to touch on before we go into more specific teams?
No, I think we've hit. I mean, there's plenty we could talk forever about strategy, but I think the main ones are just know your rules. You're going to adapt your upset tendencies if you get rewarded for it. Don't pick upsets just to pick them in a bracket. If you're convinced the team's going to win, there are other avenues to make money than losing points in a bracket by taking extreme risks. But if you're getting bonus points, that's when some of these upset plays becoming more attractive. I'm not convinced this year, by the way, you have to make a ton of upset picks. There's so many 50-50 calls where I know we have leans on one side, but the public's either opposite us or split, that you're getting enough differentiation without getting too crazy.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of my favorite parts about your guys' tool is that, you know, you guys are able to cite data from Yahoo, ESPN, you know, all the different bracket sites and be like, hey, like, pools are picking this, like, this is where people are picking in pools. So they can help you guys help make like just an educated decision on like, are you really gaining that much by not picking this team? Like, what does that look like? Because that's all at the end of the day, that's all that matters. If everyone picks Purdue to win in your pool, you shouldn't be picking Purdue, because if you win, then you're just chopping the pool. So, you know, like something like those things like don't really make sense. And you should be finding ways to gain leverage elsewhere. So I would say that's maybe my last point of strategy. If you're playing in a pool with a bunch of homers or college friends who all went to the same college, you can almost always gain an advantage by not picking said college or local area.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's another fun tip there. But I'd love to dive into like maybe one or two teams that you are higher than consensus on, or just, you know, worst case, you think we'll make a run in the tournament or are excited to have in your brackets this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many because I think there's some value out there. We've mentioned New Mexico. Obviously, it depends on what type of pool you're in as to whether how far you take them. Right. Makes sense. But, I mean, the bigger the pool, the more a pick like New Mexico makes sense. That West region in general, I like Arizona as a value because the public is heavily on North Carolina compared to the betting markets. Betting markets have Arizona as the slight favorite or Carolina. Carolina is being picked like 2-1 over Arizona.
Oh, wow.
Out of that region, or maybe not out of that region, but as a champ. Their yeah, champ pick percentage is much higher. More people are confident in North Carolina. And so you're getting value in the rest of that West. That to me looks like the region where if you were to like say, Jason, which region is going to go absolutely crazy? I could see any number of teams coming out of the West. I mean, like Michigan, would it surprise you if Michigan State suddenly pulls that 9-1 upset and makes a run to the Final Four if North Carolina's out of that region? Not at all. New Mexico with a Baylor team that isn't great defensively as the 3 seed. You know, Alabama, who's not great defensively as the 4 in that region. All sorts of variants in that region.
Yeah, one thing that I like to do before the tournament specifically is look at some of the trends of like past winners and look at the profiles of which teams normally fail early and which teams normally succeed. The best teams almost always have balance. They have good offense, good defense. Specifically, you know, top 21 adjusted offense, top 37 adjusted defense. It's these teams that are outside those metrics, but specifically like outliers. So like I think a great example is Kentucky. Awesome offense, like electric, but their defense is so bad. We're talking about fifth in adjusted offense, 108th in adjusted defense. Like they're a team that is constantly a threat to lose early, and it's because, and my way of putting this into like actual like you know game analysis is that a team with a good offense and terrible defense, they run into a team that just shoots lights out. If their offense falters at all, like they're toast because they can't play good defense, and vice versa. If their offense is not very good and their defense is electric, like if the opposing team is just shooting very well and their offense isn't able to keep up, like that's how these, you know, blue blood teams and good teams perceived lose to these like, you know, unknown 11, 10, 12, 13 seeds. So,
Sure.
yeah, so I don't know. I think that's one of my, you know, kind of favorite early exercises there. And that, you know, led me to Arizona is a team that qualifies specifically under those circumstances. And UNC is not. Now they're close. I mean, they're like 24th in offense and sixth in defense. So I don't think that they specifically are like out crazy, like they can't win, but I mean, there's some holes in their profile that makes sense.
It does, and not only that, like they're sixth in defense, and so you're like, okay, they're really good defense. They've actually had some meltdowns recently, though. That number's gone down, and it's still a really good number, but man, NC State ran like scored on them a lot, and so did a couple other teams down the stretch. They've had a couple of head scratching performances where you're like, man, is that defense going to hold up over 4 or 5 games, even though they look good on paper? You'll be surprised to know Kentucky is popular relative to their seed. I know you mentioned Kentucky already. Of course, they're an interesting evaluation because they did get better. They had injuries. They've had lots of injuries. And so you're like, okay, they might be better than what they've shown. But then again, the defensive numbers have been consistently not great. It's just they've been even better on offense when they have everybody. And those kind of teams haven't always profiled well. They're good for pulling some upsets. They're not necessarily great in the favorite role or in a neutral role for the reasons you said. If you get a team that can play slow against them, but grind out and convert possessions continuously, that puts pressure on the favorite all the time. And we see that year after year. Ohio State losing to Oral Roberts. We saw it with Iowa recently out of the Big Ten with the teams that could score but couldn't stop a cold. And we're seeing that, I think, concerns with Kentucky, Alabama, and some others.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, if you're looking at a bracket here, so they obviously play Oakland in the first round. Admittedly, I think that they probably throttle Oakland. I'm not a big Oakland person, but the next round, Texas Tech, NC State. I mean,
Texas Tech can grind you.
right? I'm probably gonna have a bracket or two where I probably pick Texas Tech over Kentucky. Just because even if they do wind up getting to maybe like a Marquette or a Florida in the round after, like again, like it's just winning these games consistently for me is really tough. And I mean, if they got to Houston, like, you know, maybe the stylistic difference could pan out for them. But like you said, the slow grinded out teams that and Houston can score too, mostly. I mean, outside of their blunder in the conference tournament. I mean, they're a top 15 scoring team in terms of offensive efficiency. So it's a tough debate there. But I do think that Kentucky could be an interesting team to fade there specifically. Another one that I guess we're talking about both fades and you know higher and lower than consensus on at this point. A team that I am worried about is Iowa State. You know, Iowa State, their offense is just not very good. Their defense is like elite. You know, we're talking about at number one in adjusted defense by a pretty, you know, solid margin here, very similar to Houston. Offense, 55th in adjusted offense. I mean, they just go on random scoring droughts. Like again, if like they can beat anyone. I mean, they are capable of beating anyone if they're hitting their shots, but I worry on a consistent basis over the course of a 6-game sample, can they play good enough offense and not run into one random team that's hitting every single shot for them to win? Any thoughts on Iowa State here?
Yeah, I think the bigger thing with Iowa State is the draw. I mean, yes, their defense can travel. Their offense can be a slog at times. It's been a little better, I think, when they've had their full rotation. We've seen a mix here. I mean, Texas Tech went to the championship game as a 3 seed with a very similar profile, just absolutely destroyed people on defense. frustrated good offenses all through the bracket and were surprised. But then we've seen teams like Tennessee have the similar profile and flame out early, that that were the absolute beast on defense, but just you never knew when they would go in the tank on offense. And so probably a high variance. And then you just, it's just a region with Auburn and Connecticut in it. And so, man, who knows? If I were, you know, I would have liked to see maybe them in a different region to think about them.
Man, that's exactly where I'm at with this, the Auburn Connecticut stuff, because if you put them in as the four seed over Kansas and Purdue, I think maybe they're live there. Obviously with them, North Carolina, I think, you know, I would have had probably Auburn advancing in that west side, or at least of the Elite Eight for sure. Now they have to draw Kentucky in the Sweet 16, or I'm sorry, Connecticut in the Sweet 16. Absolutely brutal draw for Auburn, a team that fits both of the qualifications I talked about. Top 10 in both offense and defense. Number, I believe KenPom's number 4 team overall in the entire country, and they're a 4 seed. So,
I mean,
obviously the big barrier is Connecticut. Can they beat Connecticut?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, they seem unbelievably dominant for almost the entire year. Connecticut's lost 3 games all season. All 3 of them were away. I mean, and
2 of them with key players out. So really at full strength, that's why they're the betting market favorite, because they've been even better when they're at full strength. Here's the interesting one there. If you are of the type that likes to play multiple brackets and portfolios and kind of, you might like, it's an interesting, because if I told you right now, Connor, I'm going to give you a crystal ball and Auburn's in the Elite Eight, would they be the favorite to win the national title? They'd be close, right? Because you know they probably beat UConn. Mm-hmm. And so then you're like, how do I want to play it? So there's a lot of high variability there, but in larger brackets, having a UConn champ and then an alternate or vice versa Auburn champ, where you're like, obviously both of them can't do well, but I'm kind of insured where one of them makes a run, might be a good way to play things.
No, I love that idea. And I think that that's like, again, in smaller pools, you're probably putting UConn, but I mean, 50, 100 people, like, you got to start getting a little bit weird with some of this stuff, especially if you're playing multiple pools. Like one pool, you can, again, mostly stick to the chalk. But I think that that's a great look there. And I'll probably have Auburn at least one, depending on how many pools I wind up with. But yeah, the draw definitely stinks. I guess to round out this top group of people that I think are teams that are interesting here, we talked about Auburn, Houston, Connecticut. I think Purdue's kind of interesting. So their defense got worse, but their offense is significantly better than last year in terms of their guard play. And that was what just like absolutely killed them in the year prior, because it was all on Zach Edey. Now we have Braden Smith able to, you know, kind of make some shots who help contribute along with Edey. I think they're balanced enough to potentially make a run. Everyone, I think there's probably going to be some recency bias with they just lost in the conference tournament. They lost last year as a 1 seed. I wouldn't be surprised if they go under pick, but you have the data behind that. Is that where you guys are at, or are you guys in the opposite boat here?
I mean, they're solid. They're not like supremely underpicked.
Okay.
And by that, I mean, I think there are enough people willing to take them, because all it takes is the top 10 or 20% of what people think about a team, not the median. I mean,
yeah,
50% of the people may hate them, and that doesn't matter that much. And so I think there are enough people picking them that they're an okay value. They're not like insane value. I think we talked about the West, where North Carolina is more popular. That's creating that for Arizona in some ways. With Purdue, my main concern, yes, the guard play has been better. They are 4-4 when their turnover rate's over 20%. And that was their bugaboo last year. And that's what, you know, we saw jump up and get them again. When teams can turn those guards over and put pressure on them, and my question is, will they come up against teams later in the bracket? I don't think they're going to falter like they did last year early, but will they come up against a team that can actually do that to them, play enough against Edey to, if not neutralize him, at least kind of negate him dominating the game, and then turn them over would be the question late in the bracket.
Yeah, I think teams like, even Tennessee or Houston would give them a lot of trouble.
Yes. Yes.
You know, like that would be tough. But again, that's an Elite Eight, Final Four, 2 matchups there. So again, like I think the early rounds, I mean, I don't know, maybe, you know, TCU, never know. But Kansas, I'm not really sure what to do with given their injuries and, you know, lack of clarity with Hunter Dickinson and McCuller. Like, I mean, it seems like they're going to play, right? Like, I think both of them, I'm operating under the,
yes.
But are they going to be 100%? Are they going to be, you know, that, how does that factor in, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Dan Gavitt, the selection chair, said the word he had was they were playing, but what does that mean? So I believe they'll take the court. I believe they'll take the court, but how healthy is Dickinson's shoulder? They're thin. Man, if he takes another hit, I mean, they're thin going against a Samford team right out of the gate that'll press you all game long and run you. So it is they're a high variable team. Kansas is, and then, you know, Gonzaga, I believe, is the five with them, and Gonzaga's played better. So, that is an interesting region, but yeah, Kansas is a very questionable one on that side of the bracket.
I think that's a pretty solid segue then into some of the Cinderella teams, because I mean, again, if those guys for Kansas are not like 100%, or if they suffer an in-game injury, which are all very realistic possibilities, this 13 seed Samford, I know, got some love in the betting markets. You're interested in them? Like, are you going to be picking them potentially in some brackets, depending on how many you're doing over Kansas? I don't think it's a bad play.
Yeah, in brackets for me, probably not. And that's okay. Just the way I play it. But that's because, again, in most pools, the champ's worth 32, that pick's worth one. I mean, is it right. worth it for me? In betting markets, different. Yes, I like Samford with the points, and for the variability reasons we just talked about with the injuries. You don't know that game's at altitude with a team that's deep and likes to press, which, you know, who knows how that'll work out for this game. but am I willing to, you know, play it for a single point when I'm still taking the dog and I don't know how much value I'm getting for 1 point? Probably not.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. Any other teams that are we're talking like maybe 10 seed or later that you're really interested in here to maybe win, you know, one or two games, even if you're not necessarily picking them in your bracket, they're, you know, in bigger pools or the Cinderellas of this year, basically.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you one because of interesting bracket dynamics. I think the public tends to underpick play-in teams just in general. It's hard to pick the team when you don't know who's playing as you're looking at your bracket on Tuesday. We have a pretty significant, when I say significant, like 4.5 point edge for Colorado over Boise State. Like, Colorado is a legit like top 25 team who just didn't play in a conference that gave them the opportunities to get all the wins to get seated higher, and are a legit team when fully healthy. Now they still got to beat Boise, and that game isn't until late Wednesday, so you won't know if they actually won until like Wednesday night. But they're being virtually unpicked to the Final Four, and they're a 10 seed that has, I think, a lot of commonalities with some 10s and 11s that have made runs, where they're probably like a massive value in a bracket at the large size to make a run where you might be the only one that has them.
Yeah, no, that's a great call out. I mean, Colorado 25th in adjusted offense, 42nd in defense. So they got kind of that balance. I mean, you know, again, outside our normal trends, but at the same time, like, they're close. Like, it's not like, you know, that's not the end all be all. If they're close enough, they have some balance. They're not like outrageously bad in one way or another, and they get a good draw. Interestingly enough, against Boise, like you said, Boise is a pretty good team here. I think the market's about even right now on them. So I don't know. But Florida is a really unique matchup in the round after, because Florida's done a lot of stuff great. They've beaten a couple of good teams, but they've also dropped a couple that have not been good either. So Florida's a very unique matchup for them.
They're another one of those kind of – SEC's got a lot of them this year, one of those offensively skewed teams a bit, where their offensive efficiency is way higher than their defensive numbers, and they just lost – Hanglot in their center to that broken leg, unfortunately, in the SEC championship game. I think they have the depth to overcome that, but they still lost like a 7-footer who plays 20 minutes a game. And so that creates more uncertainty that could open up a run as well. You never know how those situations go when you have to turn around and play on like within 5 days of that injury happening.
Yeah, no, it's never easy. A team that I'm kind of interested in that's an 11 seed here and is not, you know, I guess that's much of a Cinderella if you're paying attention to the betting markets. I like Oregon. I think Oregon over South Carolina is kind of interesting. You know, I think if they win this initial game, they're playing a Creighton team that is kind of like a late bloomer. Ken Barkley did some great work that, you know, basically talks about teams who come on later and make like massive jumps in the last month or two of the season tend to greatly underperform early on in the tournament. That being said, Creighton matches, you know, both offense and defensive thresholds to win the national title, but They also, I think, you know, there's some holes with this Creighton team. So for me, yeah. I think Oregon, I bet Oregon to beat South Carolina. We'll talk about that more in tomorrow's episode with the betting stuff. But I think Oregon is an interesting one to maybe win that game and the game against Creighton there. Any thoughts on this Oregon team?
Oregon is like, 17-year cicada? Like every 6 or 7 years, Oregon is yep. supposed to be out of the tournament. Dana Altman makes changes late in the year. They win the Pac-12 tournament. They get in as a 12 or 11, and then they go to the Sweet 16. That's happened twice now in the last decade. Yep. And this team is thin. This team had so many injuries. But, man, and then toward the end of the year, they basically put it in the hands of, like, their three best players and were like, go win games. And then Dante – and Folly Dante was – I don't know if a center has had – I mean, besides Zach Edey, has had a dominant stretch like what he did in that Pac-12 tournament. The dude's shooting like 90% from the field over like the last five games, just absolutely like dominating people. So yeah, that's an interesting one. South Carolina team will throw. They've been exposed by teams that can score. They run some kind of mix up defenses, and they've been able to beat the SEC teams that aren't as good shooters. And so the question is, you know, can Oregon break them down? Because you've seen a wide range of outcomes for the South Carolina team. They've won a lot of close games against okay teams and then got blasted by Auburn twice. They, you know, so I think they're better than their raw numbers, but they still, Oregon is still the team on the rise.
Yeah. And they're one of those teams that South Carolina is one of those teams that plays slow. Their numbers are adjusted really well. Like, you know, like if you when KenPom makes adjustments, they, you know, adjust for a conference and everything. And you know, if you play in the Big Ten in the SEC, they get like a pretty sizable bump here. But you know, like when you look at their raw numbers, they're not, you know, nearly as good. So, you know, we're looking at 67th in offense, 112th in defense, like raw. I mean, it's not a very good team if you're just looking at raw numbers. Now, again, those came against good competition, but so I don't know. It's something worth thinking about. I like Oregon as a team to potentially, you know, make a small mini run here.
I think a lot of these Western teams, I mean, New Mexico's the same way. A lot of these also on the 11 line. It's like they're very much a, if they're a dog at all, they're not much of one. They pretty much have a chance to make a run as any six seed would, five or six seed would. So, yeah, definitely teams to look at, if especially if you get bonuses for these seeds or upsets. Those would be really strong plays. But I don't think you even need that. I think you can play them straight up because their chances of winning are pretty good.
Yeah, I don't mind it. And we'll, you know, we can dive into them more in the betting betting show tomorrow. But any other like lower key seeds? I think I have one more that's interesting, but I'll kick it to you first if you got anyone else.
Yeah, let me see. 10 seed. You know, I like some of the dogs probably more when we talk betting than here because of the way we're playing it. But I mean, We talked against Kansas, but I like Charleston against Bama for a lot of the same reasons. Bama's defense, that is a team that has been imploding on defense for the last month. I mean, just terrible numbers. The only time they don't have absolute terrible numbers when their opponents shoot like 15% from three. if their opponents just hit 30%, you're lighting them up, honestly, because they're bad at everything else. I mean, they're struggling to find stops. And this Charleston team, last year's team was like 31-3 and like the hot team to pick, and they did not win. This team started 1-3, but I think is peaking at the right time and coming on, had some new players, had new players to integrate into a team that had great success. I think it took a little while, but this team is on the rise and capable, especially against a team like Alabama that struggles to get stops.
Yeah, no, that's that makes a lot of sense. I think that's a pretty good one there. And I mean, getting hot at the right time is very important. It doesn't, you know, it's not necessarily the most quantifiable all the time, but I think it's something that definitely matters. And so one last one for me, the Morehead State Illinois matchup is really interesting to me because Morehead State is another team, 356th in average possession length offensively. They take good shots, 35th in effective field goal rate. Defensively, you know, they're Adjusted metrics are not good, 120th, but effective field goal rate wise, they're ninth, you know, like if you're looking at their defense. So again, it's one of those teams where you slow the game down, you make it a little bit more high variance because there's fewer possessions. You make a couple of your shots, play a couple of, you know, good possessions on defense. Like, I think they could very squarely be in play here. So again, like, I'm not picking them directly, but
Connor, yeah. On the betting show, but I gave that one out as a pick earlier today.
Ooh, all right, nice. Okay,
because, well, cool. We'll save a lot of the reasons you just said. Slow pace, and also Illinois. What don't they do? Their defensive numbers are not good, but they also don't turn people. They're like literally like 360th turnovers. That's one area Moorhead has struggled. But if Illinois doesn't turn people over, you're kind of like letting Moorhead off the hook. The one game they played well against a good team was Indiana. Against a major conference team, and Indiana didn't turn them over, and they only lost by a point. So that's one where I think the matchup and Illinois coming. How many times have we seen this Big Ten team with Illinois' profile run through the Big Ten tournament, and then get to the NCAA tournament and face a different style, and it not work out?
Yeah, all the time. That's a great point there. Excited to talk about that more on the betting show specifically, because I mean, hey, good teams win, great teams cover, right? That's all we care about with the bets. Maybe winning outright for the brackets matters more, but that's awesome, man. Well, I appreciate this. This was great. Nice, quick, informative, 30 minutes in and out. Tell everyone, you know, what you guys have going on or anything you want to plug right now. Feel free to, you know, go wild with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Come to pullgenius.com. I believe we have some promo codes with 444 here that you might have in this, you know, the notes.
Show notes. Notes.
And so we have bracket picks. But not only that, you get unlimited brackets. Tell us your rules. Tell us everything. We generate the best bracket and four alternates. So you're going to get five to choose from or play all five, depending on the size. You can look at those. We've got team notes, some of the injuries, some of the trends we've talked about. We've written that up. We explain why we're high or low on a team relative to, say, their raw power number in our notes. And those numbers are used to generate our bracket predictions. We also have Calcutta and Survivor Tools if you're in those kind of pools. Check it out. Lots of fun contests that we have there. And so we'll be grinding over the next day watching where the markets move. You know, we don't want to be too far off market. We do take some stands. We find we can take stands against teams. We don't want to be too far above a market. And so we're going to monitor that and see where we're at on teams. But, you know, we'll be watching that over the next day and writing and explaining why we're making the picks we are.
Awesome. Absolutely love it. And as we mentioned, we will be live again tomorrow talking about our favorite bets for the first round, maybe a couple futures, you know, here and there. But I look forward to it. So appreciate you guys all hanging out. And Jason, appreciate you again. For Jason, I'm Connor. We'll see you guys tomorrow.